The Tom Woods Show, episode 997.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Men, it's time to say goodbye to those $99 suits on the clearance rack. This week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $379 at Indochino.com when entering Woods at checkout.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I am finally back in my regular routine, but I was more or less knocked out of commission for a few days, so I need to build up another backlog of interviews so that I can release them to you as episodes. So in the meantime, I'm going to release this one today, which is going to be a two-parter. In the first part, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some things on my mind, and then in the second part, I'm going to play the audio of a related talk I gave back in 2012 at the Paul Festival, which was concurrent with the Republican National Convention in Tampa. So anyway, I'll say, by the way, I think this is the first episode that I've released that I recorded after Hurricane Irma. So just so you know, the fact that you're hearing me means that nothing went wrong. It actually was not so bad for my area. No real problems, but we took precautions all the same, and everything turned out fine. And I, as it turns out, I didn't even wind up needing the services of a price gouger, but I certainly hope there would have been some around had I needed them. But anyway, I did fight with some people on Twitter saying, look, I live here. I may need last-minute supplies, right? Anyway, by the way, one other thing about price gouging that I might point out is that I can understand why a big chain might not want to engage in price gouging. If you haven't listened to my episode on price gouging, I will link to it at tomwoods.com/997 as an episode that I mentioned. Let's see, what number episode was that? Because I just did one with David R. Henderson. So let's see which one that is. 987. So if you want to go directly to it, tomwoods.com/987. I'm really happy with that episode because I think it very nicely summarizes the arguments regarding price gouging. Anyway, why might a national chain not do it? Well, for the same reason, think about this. Think about the weekend a big new movie comes out and people flock to the movie theater and you might not even be able to get a seat. The showings could easily all be sold out for that day. And I think superficially we might think to ourselves, well, if the movie theater used surge pricing and said, well, this is a movie everybody wants to see, and we have to ration the seats somehow. So for this movie, the ticket's going to be an extra $5. They could do that, and that would perhaps make the market clear. When the market clears, what that means is that everybody who wants to sell at that price can sell, and everybody who wants to buy at that price can buy. Whereas if the tickets were $100, well, there'd be a lot of movie theater operators who would want to sell and not very many who'd want to buy. And if the tickets were 10 cents, there'd be a lot of people who want to buy at that price, not very many people want to sell. But market clears at the price where, you know, basically you get the same number of people who want to buy as want to sell, and therefore everybody is satisfied. You know, everybody who enters the marketplace is satisfied. So why don't they do that? Why don't they ration out? By the way, I wasn't planning to talk about this, but you know, it's one of these crazy episodes where I got nothing prepared. So I'm just going to, I was going to talk about a few other things, which I will get to in a minute. But this is a valuable point. Why don't movie theaters do that and you know, jack up the price when they know everybody wants to go see the new Spider-Man movie or whatever it is? And that way they wouldn't have all this overflow. They would match supply with demand. And the answer is goodwill. They want to preserve goodwill among their customer base, and they believe that customers would look at that price and say, this is terrible, they're taking advantage of us. And they believe that they would lose goodwill. So yes, in the short run, they'd get more revenue, let's say. But in the long run, they would forfeit customer goodwill, which is much, much more lucrative and beneficial to them in the long run. So therefore, they forego the use of surge pricing in that situation. Now, in other cases, surge pricing works to the extent that it alienates few enough people and brings in an overwhelmingly greater amount of revenue that it still makes sense to use it. For example, Uber has surge pricing. So there's no a priori way to know whether it makes sense to use it in a given situation. It's basically a matter of entrepreneurial insight into their market to figure out whether or not it makes sense to do it. So even though we theorize about price gouging and we say that in such and such situation, it would make sense for the supplier to raise the price because that's the only way to ration out the existing supply, that also at the same time encourages the bringing in of greater supply and encourages the conservation of that existing supply, even though it makes economic sense for them to do that, you can see that why for goodwill reasons they might not want to, because the public believes that it's evil and exploitative. So in general, price gouging, you might see it among some isolated supplier here and there. But in general, the big chains are going to want to avoid it because they believe that whatever short-term windfall they might get is going to be swamped by the negative coverage that they'd get and the loss of consumer goodwill in the long run. All right. Anyway, with that clarification out of the way, which I wish I had made on the price gouging episode, but anyway, I guess what I wanted to talk about today is I'm a little bit discouraged on two fronts. Here. On one front, I guess I'm discouraged that during the Ron Paul presidential campaigns, those of you who are old enough to remember this and to have experienced it yourselves, it wasn't necessarily that we thought he was going to win, but still we felt when we saw our numbers and our determination and what wonderful people we were meeting in the Ron Paul movement, we felt, I think, an optimism about the future. We couldn't quite pinpoint why. And we couldn't articulate the precise path that society was going to take that could justify our optimism, but we felt it. I can't be alone in that. It was thrilling and exciting, and every day we would scour YouTube watching Ron Paul videos to see what else he had done, what other platitude he had blown up, or what other sacred cow he'd gone after that day. He just broke all the rules. He told the truth when it was unfashionable and where it was unfashionable, as you'll hear in the talk that I'm going to play for you today. He was an extraordinary person, and what thrilling times those were that somebody like this, who was so radical, could nevertheless generate such a following among people, the vast majority of whom were educated by, you know, in a propagandistic system that taught them the opposite of everything Dr. Paul was saying. So that many people could support him and see through the propaganda. It doesn't impress me that Bernie Sanders gains a lot of supporters. He's just repeating what they all learned in the fifth grade. So no surprise there. Not one of them understands how a market economy works or basic economics. They genuinely don't. So it does not surprise me at all. I'm surprised that his following isn't larger than it is. So that's no big deal that somebody would say the opposite of what everyone's been trained to believe and generate that much of a following in the midst of either media blackouts or media demonization is an extraordinary thing. And I think that's what we were all latching onto. This is an amazing thing we're all living through together. And this is an experience we're never going to forget. And those were wonderful, wonderful, exciting times. And now I just don't feel that anymore because Dr. Paul's retired. He's doing great work with his Ron Paul Liberty Report, and he's still very active. I mean, the other day, the street by his house was totally flooded. So he put on his big, long boots and trudged out there himself to inspect for himself how deep the waters were because he knew he had to get to the airport. And I just love this guy. That's just, what is he now, 82? And he's gonna put on his boots and go out there and see what's what out there. I mean, just this, he's a great guy. But he doesn't have the platform he had when he was running for president. And that's what a lot of us who aren't really that into politics said in defense of politics in that situation was, like it or not, a lot of people pay attention when you run for president. They just do. And he was also a unifying force for a lot of us. We could all rally around him. There are a lot of libertarian organizations. There are a lot of libertarian personalities. But Ron Paul, like it or not, was a great rallying point for all of us. And without that center, it seems like the whole thing is just splintering off in a lot of directions. And I asked him about this when he was our special guest on the 100th episode of Contra Krugman, my other podcast over at ContraKrugman.com. And he's still more optimistic about things than I am. I don't have that same feeling of excitement that I had, an optimism that I had. And I wish we had been able to figure out a better way to channel that energy. Now, maybe that was wishful thinking, because again, without a presidential campaign to keep people's attention and interest, well, maybe it's just, that's just the way it is, that people's interest is going to wane, it's going to fade away, and there isn't much you can do about it, and it's always going to be just that hardcore people still out there. And the trouble is that the other side has a lot of political candidates who are out there rallying them. Again, I'm not saying politics is necessarily the solution to our problems, but I am saying it does rally a lot of people. There's just no denying that. And that's absent from our movement right now. And it's discouraging to see the effects of it. So maybe I'm wrong about this. So maybe in the comments of this episode, you can tell me why I'm wrong to feel this way. And I've been reading The Case for Optimism. Gary North has some excellent stuff about technology and the case for optimism and the fact that, you know, a lot of the things that socialists of yesteryear were calling for, nobody even remotely considers calling for today. That is an advance. And also Michael Malice makes a pretty good case for optimism, and maybe I need to get him on to try to persuade me of that case, the case for optimism. But anyway, right now I'm just a little bit discouraged about the situation. The second thing is related to the first, which is the number of people who are groaning about Ron Paul and bemoaning his influence seems to be on the rise. Now, granted, it's on the rise from 12 to 28, so I guess I shouldn't be super-duper upset, but there is a wing of the libertarian movement that is too pure for Ron Paul. And oh my goodness, his influence has been terrible. Okay, nobody would even know what libertarianism was if it weren't for Ron Paul. We all know that. Everybody knows that. And if the most anti-war congressman in the history of the U.S. is not enough to impress you, then go jump in a lake. I'm not interested. But I just feel like as a matter of justice, the guy is owed respect as a matter of justice. He goes to Florida and in a debate says we should normalize relations with Cuba. He says that in Florida. That was just the way he was. He did that sort of thing all the time. You're telling me every one of these people would have the guts to do the things he did? Yeah, right. And not one of these people who are so desperate for popularity and to have, you know, to be in line with fashionable opinion. You're telling me these wouldn't have wound up to be sellouts at the first opportunity? I think some of them would. Maybe some of them would. Well, be that as it may, that's all speculation. Still, it's just wrong. It's wrong to watch people do this. Scott Horton says, all you got to do is listen to this guy for 5 minutes, this grandfatherly man, and you can see how good he is just as a human being. He's just a good, decent person. I mean, this is a guy who hardly ever used the word I in his presidential campaigns. I will do this. I will do that. I did this. I did that. They practically had to beg him to say, as president, I. He just won't. That's just not his way. Like even the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, he calls it the Institute for Peace and Prosperity. Because he feels like if there's too much attention on him, then people get caught up in a cult of personality instead of getting caught up in the ideas that he's trying to champion. So he doesn't emphasize that. And to say that's highly unusual for a congressman is rather an understatement. He could have scored a lot of points on his opponents if he had done dirty, nasty things, and he just wasn't going to do that. He just wasn't interested. And there are times when I would sometimes think, yeah, but you got to just hit this one guy, you know, and it just wasn't his way. And maybe that would have forfeited some of the goodwill he built up with other people if he'd done that. So I trust him. I think his judgment is really good. So to all those people who want to hold their anti-Ron Paul libertarian convention, good thing they don't have phone booths around, or I could make the joke that you could hold your convention inside one. Anyway, very frustrating and annoying. There's also, now there's a new website I won't tell you about because I don't want to give them traffic. There's a website run by former Gary Johnson campaign staffers. who generally are anti-Ron Paul, although they don't stop to note that their own candidate was pro-Ron Paul. Gary Johnson spoke at Ron Paul events, and they liked each other, and he endorsed Ron Paul. I think he endorsed Ron Paul. They certainly got along very well. So Gary Johnson himself had no problem with Ron Paul, so who knows why these people think they have to be more pure than their own candidate. But they've started a website, and they ran an article about me with an inflammatory headline that they then changed because it was so ridiculous. And it's about the dumb back and forth I had with the chairman of the Libertarian Party. I'm sick of this at this point. They ran an article about it. Not once did they quote me in the whole article. Now, that would get you an F at journalism school, right? Not once do they quote me. But they say that I denounce the Libertarian Party. Well, then quote me saying it. I mean, isn't that what they teach you in journalism school? Give me one quotation. And they also say that I urged my listeners to abandon the Libertarian Party. I don't recall doing that. I don't think I ever said that. Plus, could you imagine me saying that? Those of you who've listened to me for a long time, could you imagine me getting in front of my microphone and saying to all you folks, you got to quit this. You got to get out of that party. Like I would ever tell you guys what to do in that way. The only times I tell you guys what to do is I say, look, here's a really great book. I think you should go read it. Or here's a really worthy cause. If you're in a position to help it out, please do that. But I'm not going to tell you go do this or do that or what. That's up to you. I trust your judgment to do the right thing. I'm not going to tell you not join. To the contrary, I would like to see people join the Libertarian Party and do the right thing with it. And steer it back in the right direction. I think my theory is they're deliberately lying about that so as to send the message that Woods doesn't want his supporters in the party, so don't bother. I think it's a way of trying to drive my people away by making it seem like I don't want them to do it. But I do want you to do it. If you're interested in this sort of thing, you should join the Libertarian Party. You should join the Mises Caucus of the Libertarian Party. There's a Facebook group for that. You should do that. I've never said otherwise. To my recollection, I don't think I've ever said otherwise. But so this sort of nastiness is really picking up steam all over the place. It was nice to see a Facebook update by Robert Higgs, who is loved by everyone in the libertarian movement, and that is a tricky thing to pull off, saying, things are getting pretty weird when some libertarians believe that libertarians should sign a public letter disavowing support for Nazism. Leaping lizards, Sandy. Next thing you know, some Christians will urge their fellow Christians to sign a public letter disavowing support for Satan. Well, pretty good. All right, here, there are a series of random observations. Now I'm going to play for you a short talk I gave. Now, it's recorded on an amateur device because they didn't have professional recording at this event, but it was a big deal, and because it's recorded on an unprofessional system, doesn't mean it's bad, but if it were recorded in a central location through a soundboard, there'd obviously be much better quality. But also, I think with recordings like this, you can hear like localized clapping more loudly than the more general clapping. All right, just, I know, but I hope you enjoy it. Before we do that, let's hear a word from our sponsor. Doot, 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 doot.
All right, I think we all know in the abstract that if you want to look your best, you want to have a made-to-measure suit instead of one you just pick up off the rack. But you think, well, what am I, a millionaire? I can't afford a suit like that. But you can with Indochino. $379 for a made-to-measure suit, and it's easy to do. You can measure yourself very easily. They show you exactly how to do it to get the size measurements they need to give you the suit that will fit you best. In fact, you can customize your suit. You can choose from hundreds of top-quality fabrics, personalize it just the way you want it, including lapels and pleats and jacket linings and all kinds of things. I found it easy and very user-friendly to place an order at Indochino.com. Well, this week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $379. At Indochino.com when entering Woods at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit, plus free shipping. So that's Indochino.com using promo code Woods for any premium suit for just $379 and free shipping. That's an amazing deal for a suit that'll fit you better than anything off the rack ever could. So check it out at Indochino.com, promo code Woods.
All right, everybody, here is my talk from the Paul Festival from 2012. I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome with me, Thomas E. Woods.
Thanks, guys. Thank you very much. Thanks. You guys are great. You guys are the salt of the earth. You're the best. But I was thinking about a month ago that it would be great for somebody to write a book called Ron Paul, The Army of One. During his tenure in Congress, Ron Paul cast the sole no vote more than any other congressman. And in fact, he cast the sole no vote more than all other congressmen put together. Now, when the vote is 260 to 157, nobody takes much notice. But when the vote is 434 to 1, people wonder, who is that one? We know who that one is. He's the man lobbyists have tried in vain to buy off, the man whose arm even presidents have been unable to twist. He's the man who refuses to stay confined to the 3x5 card of officially approved opinion in America. Now, there are certain things you just don't say in America, and if you do say them, well, you better be prepared to back off, apologize, explain yourself away. That's the behavior we have come to expect from every politician who accidentally tells the truth. But on May 15, 2007, Ron Paul got the country's attention because in a presidential debate, he said things about his government's foreign policy that Americans are not supposed to hear. And when Rudy Giuliani demanded a retraction, not a lot of Giuliani fans here. When he demanded a retraction, he probably expected Ron to be like everybody else. Backpedal, apologize, whoops, sorry, I forgot myself, I strayed from the 3x5 card of approved opinion. But not only did he not do that, Dr. Paul amplified his remarks. He stepped right up, right in Rudy's face. And that moment, that was one of the loneliest moments in Dr. Paul's career. He had no idea that he was going to win all the post-debate polls. But there were all these people out there who were going to rally him. He had no idea about that, but he looked in that camera and told the truth anyway. That's what I mean about being an army of one. In a Republican debate in this very state, Dr. Paul said, we should normalize trade relations with Cuba. In a debate in South Carolina, the reddest of red states, he's stuck by his guns on the drug war. He's just going to tell all the truth. Then my favorite, he spoke before an Arab American association, and they asked, Dr. Paul, did you write a special speech for our group? And he said, no, I don't write special speeches for different groups. I give the same speech everywhere about individual liberty. Favorite things. A guy you've never heard of, Terry Holt, who worked on George W. Bush's presidential campaigns, said that Ron Paul, as he recalled, could not be influenced the way the other congressmen could. He said this, the thing about Ron Paul is, what does he want that we have? He's never been someone who was interested in being co-opted or in trading and dealing. He would tell us how he was voting, and that was that. There was nothing he wanted that we could offer him in exchange for his vote. As an army of one, he has stood up to the conventional wisdom and been right every time. In 2001, on the House floor, he said the Federal Reserve gave us the boom-bust cycle with the stock market bubble, and now it's inflating a real estate bubble, and that's going to go bust just like all the others. This is a guy who can tell the future, for heaven's sake. Through his great and noble example as the Army of One, he's brought out millions of reinforcements, and all of you are Exhibit A of what he's done. All right, but now for the ugliness. I'm sorry, we were having a wonderful event, but I do have to mention Mitt Romney for a minute. What are you going to get if you vote for Mitt Romney? Well, you're going to get a lot of... Well, let me give the answer. All right, you're going to get a lot more neocon bellicosity in foreign policy, fueled by propaganda that would insult a fourth grader. You're going to get a guy who tells you that if we implemented Ron Paul's budget plan that wants to cut $1 trillion, that would cause a depression. Well, you know what? That's exactly the same view that the New York Times and Paul Krugman have, and that's what Mitt Romney is saying. There's your big choice. And then, but don't forget, he's got the true conservative Paul Ryan for his Yep, my gosh, what a draconian budget plan he has that finally balances in the year 2040. Then he voted for Medicare Part D, the NDAA, and for TARP, which is the worst domestic policy atrocity in all of U.S. history. And he gave all the phony baloney arguments for it. And now, notice what happens. The official left and the official right now play the game. The left portrays him as an extremist. And the fake right says, oh, he's a wonderful conservative. And each of them, they're just trying to raise money. The left raises money by making people think, oh my gosh, Paul Ryan's going to abolish everything. And the right raises money by saying, he is. Look, he's all these wonderful things. He's just another one of these phonies like all the rest, as anybody with a brain can see. Party has been like Lucy with the football, and all these suckers every year are Charlie Brown. A vote for Mitt Romney is a vote for the status quo, and anyone who thinks otherwise is absolutely delusional.
Yeah!
Romney is the anti-Ron Paul. On foreign policy, on the Fed, on the budget, on civil liberties, what's left? And unlike Ron, he is the consummate politician. Every word is carefully weighed in light of focus group results. In fact, I've sometimes said that the guy is so robotic that it would not surprise me if we opened his head up and would find circuitry and wiring in there. Dr. Paul will never endorse such a reprehensible human being. Messaging. Well, what's the message of this particular event? I can only speak for this event. But our message, the way I see it, is that if you even want to imply that we are involved in some kind of common cause with a monster like Mitt Romney, then you have missed the whole point of the Ron Paul revolution. Now, I love Dr. Paul. I would do anything he asked of me. And I look back with a sadness filled with, at the same time, coupled with good memories of things that I've been privileged to do with and for him, speaking at many events as sort of his opening speaker. And boy, I get to speak to huge audiences when that happens. But testifying before Congress on auditing the Fed and speaking at his great barbecue event with thousands of people come to wish him a happy birthday and working on projects with him. These are memories that I will cherish forever. But the question that so many of us are asking, though, is what do we do now? What now? What should our next step be? And why isn't Ron Paul telling me what to do? The answer is that only you can know what you are called to do. Only you can know your own strengths. Only you can know exactly where you fit in to this historic struggle. If you're a writer, then write. If you want to become a writer, start practicing. If you have some talent, use it. If you can do audio video work for a Liberty Group, do it. If you're a graphic designer or an animator or a humorist, use those talents. And there are plenty of worthy organizations you can join that do great work. The 10th Amendment Center, promoting state nullification. I'm sure the Florida chapter could use some help, headed by the great Andrew Nappy. Join Oath Keepers, too. They're out there doing good work for us. There's my old home, the Ludwig von Mises Institute, educating people around here. And then for sites to visit, well, for news and fellowship, DailyPaul.com. And don't forget the Ron Paul forums, too. But also, of course, LouRockwell.com, where Ron Paul meets every day. And avoid the propaganda by looking at antiwar.com. And incidentally, I wouldn't be altogether unhappy if you paid me a visit at TomWoods.com. Whatever you do, remember the example of Dr. Paul. In a world of cowards, stick to your principles. In a sea of lies, tell the truth. Into the darkness, shine a light. Do those things. Be that person. That is what Ron Paul wants from you. Now, the earliest appearance of the word liberty in writing comes down to us from ancient Sumer in Mesopotamia in 3000 B.C., so the land between the rivers, Sumer. We find it in that civilization's cuneiform script. So you and I, that means, are engaged in a struggle that has been going on long before we were born and will persist long after we're dead, the struggle between liberty and power. And so be courageous and studious and persistent. Remember that the one person on this earth you have full power to improve is yourself. Learn and teach whenever and wherever you can. Be your own army of one, and then you will be carrying on the Ron Paul legacy.
All right, everybody, here's some good news, though, before I let you go. I've got another clever listener who has created a website that I think you'll be interested in. Particularly the smarter ones who listen in. That's just a way to flatter you, to get you to click on it. It's dataanalysisclassroom.com. I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/997. And here's how he describes it. You know, we're constantly bombarded with news like new studies show blah, 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 or recent data reveal blah, blah, blah. The curious people who want to understand these better and make informed decisions often don't have the basics of probability and statistics to judge the merit or question the data and methods used in the study. They may have learned these during their college years, but just don't have the time to revisit these topics. The textbooks are verbose, cumbersome, and frankly annoying to learn from. Well, whether you're a homeschooler teaching your kids the basic concepts of probability and preparing them for AP statistics, or an average person who's busy with life but curious about data and analysis, you'll find dataanalysisclassroom.com very useful, instructive, and easy to learn from. The college students in STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math, should definitely look at it. No excuse. You'll find it better than your boring statistics lecture. People of all backgrounds and ages can learn data analysis, probability, and statistics in a fun and intuitive way without the technical lingo. There'll be one concept explained each week in a short conversational lesson. For libertarian viewers of the site, look out for the hidden satire at the end of each lesson. Great! So check it out at dataanalysisclassroom.com. It's free, and you'll get a lot out of it. So I'll give you publicity like this for your brand new site or blog and several other really great bonuses, including membership in our free private bloggers group where you can get help when you need it and give help when you can. How do you get these great bonuses, including publicity from me? Well, check out tomwoods.com/publicity. You'll find out there. You just got to get your hosting through my link, which gives you the best price you can get on it anyway, and I'll give you this nice publicity and help you out so there won't be tumbleweeds going by when you launch your website. All right, that's all for today, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.